The Survival Guide to Life, a podcast about how to win in life every second, physically, mentally, spiritually, financially, consistently.
Hey everyone, how's it going? We got another episode of Survival Guide to Life, and this week we have Sandy Rodriguez. She is the author of the book Choose to Prevail. Thank you for coming on the show, Sandy, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Omar. I've been listening to your podcast for a while now, and I have really been enjoying it, so it's quite an honor to be here with you.
Oh, I appreciate that, and for the fact that you keep up with it and you listen to it. So I just kind of wanted to ask for the listeners who's listening on in, just a little bit more about Choose to Prevail.
Thank you so much, Omar. I think that the best way to describe the book titled Choose to Prevail is to describe it as a motivational book for people that don't normally gravitate toward motivational books. It's a book that a lot of people have been describing as an experience similar to sitting down with a friend and grabbing a cup of coffee, grabbing a cup of tea, grabbing a beer, grabbing some kind of a drink, and sitting down and just having a conversation. So the experience is more similar to having a nice conversation with a friend to see what can be done about whatever is troubling you, rather than the experience of looking into a traditional self-help book. So that would be the description of the book, Omar.
Okay, so what was your reasoning for this approach of this book?
Well, let me tell you, I was writing it with a very specific group of people in mind, and it's a very diverse group. I have a lot of friends in different countries, of different ages, different genders, different styles, different circles. And what happened, Omar, was that a couple of years ago, many of them, even friends of mine that are very accomplished, very successful, very attractive, they were saying, you know, we're feeling a little bit depressed, a little bit insecure, maybe we are not happy with the path our life has taken, and we're just not feeling as well as we should. And I thought that was very surprising, Omar, because again, these are friends that if you were to look at them, you would assume that everything was going right in their lives. So I thought, well, seeing that this is a very widespread situation, maybe I can write something that can be helpful to them and others. But then I thought many of my friends are not necessarily the type of people that would think to pick up a self-help book or necessarily move or gravitate towards a book of this nature. So I thought, how can I make it more engaging? How can I make it friendly? How can I make it easy to read, easily digestible, and quick to read as well? So I thought, well, maybe what I can do is package it in a limited number of pages. So I planned on creating a 100-page book so that it won't take anybody too long to read. But the writing style is what makes it more distinct. Not to say that there isn't a lot of value in more traditional self-help books. Of course there is, and many people find wonderful advice in their pages. But in this case, I was really reaching toward an audience that is not normally the type of person that would look for books in general or self-help books in particular. So it comes off more as a conversation. I talk about, without falling into the realm of a memoir or anything around those lines, I talk about situations that might come up or that I have encountered. And I tell you things that I have tried that worked, things that did not work. And the book discusses suggestions that the reader can implement and test for themselves. And it's really not so much of, let's say, instructional manual that goes, okay, step number one, do this. Step number two, do this. No, it's more of a launching point for exploration and finding your own path, but moving towards your own path in a way that is far more confident and far more empowered. That's what I want the book to transmit, to have you complete the reading of the book, read it, and feel automatically much more confident, much more at peace, and with far more faith in the future.
Now, with trying to achieve this, how did you go about figuring out to structure this in aspects. So like, okay, let me start here and let me end here. And these are the things that I want to say worked for me, and these are the things I want to say didn't work for me. Like, what was sort of your methodology in that?
That's a very good question, Omar. What I did mostly was I structured it over the course of 20 different chapters, and each chapter focuses specifically on a certain type of problem that one might encounter. For example, it may be the loss of a loved one, or it may be an excessive amount of self-consciousness that leads to difficulties in public speaking, for instance. Or it might be perhaps insecurities about your own appearance or the way you are perceived on a physical level. And there are many different things that are mentioned, but the overarching theme throughout the entire 20 chapters is that most of the problems that we can encounter, be they very large, such as the loss of a loved one or any tremendously devastating circumstance, or be they more minor, for instance, I don't know, being blocked on social media or finding a lot of traffic on your way to school or to work. Really, the overarching solution to all kinds of difficulties, be they big or small, has a lot to do with a shift in your perspective. It has to do with the way you talk about a specific incident or about yourself, the way you talk to others, and the way you talk to yourself. And lastly, there are several actionable, practical steps that people can take. So it's basically a three-pronged approach. You shift your perspective, you speak about the circumstances and about yourself in specific ways that are helpful rather than not. And also, if possible, you take specific actionable steps. Let me give you an example, for instance. I think that a lot of people struggle with speaking in public. I think that would be the number one fear that most people express in general. That's surprisingly common. And sadly, it's common, even though it is one of the traits that are most valued in most circles. It's very important to learn how to speak in public confidently because it's going to be useful in your career. It's going to be useful in your social life. It's even going to be useful in your romantic life. It's going to be necessary at some point in your lifetime. And it's something that a lot of people fear. Now, Omar, I find that the reason most people shy away from that or even have a full-blown phobia is because most of us are tremendously self-conscious at that point in time when it comes to the time to come and speak in public or be in front of a camera or be in front of an audience. We're tremendously self-conscious, and we believe or we feel that everybody out there is staring at us and making assumptions and making judgments and being harsh. And the reality is that people are just not. You need to understand that. Even though you might assume, okay, everybody's looking at me, everybody's paying attention to any flaws, any mistakes, any missteps, in reality, that is not the case. In reality, most people are very absorbed with what's going on in their own lives, and they're not just not paying that much attention to us in general. So really, we need to lose a little bit of that degree of self, consciousness, and that makes a world of a difference. Now, you might say, well, Sandy, how can I believe that to be true? I don't think that's accurate. Okay, well, I can ask your audience. Think about somebody that you see frequently, maybe a friend at school, a friend from work, somebody in your neighborhood. What was that person wearing the last three times you saw the person? I'm pretty sure, Omar, that people cannot remember. I would be very surprised if anybody was aware of what another person was wearing the last three times that they were seen. In reality, people are just not paying that much attention. And that, even though it might be a blow to the ego, is very freeing, and it allows us to move through life, and specifically through the process of public speaking, with a lot more confidence. Because we see that if anything, if we want somebody to look and pay attention, we actually have to go out of our way. They're not sitting there specifically focusing on our flaws or anything of that nature. And it's very helpful to understand that that is the case.
Yeah, and with realizing that and trying to come to this connotation that, you know, not everyone is like dissecting or, you know, criticizing every little facet of my life, and to just be able to go and execute, what is your perspective on how to gain that mindset or how to develop that mindset?
I think there are many ways.
Yes,
I think that there are many ways that you can train yourself to realize that. And one of the ways is exactly what I was referring to. Think to a time when you went to a sporting event, for instance, or maybe you went to a concert. Even though you were extremely interested in the sporting event or in the concert, I strongly doubt that you were acutely aware of everything that the lead singer or the quarterback or the batter was doing 100% of the time. Even if you might have been extremely interested, I don't think you were paying attention to the very last detail. You surely were at some point maybe checking your cell phone, speaking with your friend, maybe going off to buy a snack, getting yourself a drink. Even if, let's say that even if you were there because you paid money to be there, you were interested in being there, you made the effort to be there, it's a fascinating thing. Even so, you're not acutely aware of every last detail 100% of the time. So it stands to reason that people in general would be far less, aware of our every movement if we are not like somebody that they specifically went out of their way to see. Now, sometimes it also helps a lot to change the way that we speak to ourselves and about ourselves. And Omar, I think this goes beyond simple affirmations. Not to say that there's not a lot of value in affirmations, because there certainly is, but I think that it has to be more of something that you do permanently, that whenever you catch yourself saying the opposite, you say, no, stop. For instance, if you go around telling people, oh, I'm a terrible public speaker, I always get so nervous, I always get so flustered, I sweat and I stammer, and I really don't know what to say, then, you know, it will eventually come to pass. That's the mindset that will become more ingrained, and that will become a reality over time. And in fact, because of the fact that you're telling people that, then they will be extra attentive when it comes to searching for flaws or searching for nerves or searching for beads of sweat or whatnot. And the opposite happens, Omar, when you tell yourself and others that you're quite comfortable. If somebody says, so how do you feel about public speaking? Are you at all nervous about that speech you're giving? You can just say, oh, no, not at all. I really enjoy public speaking. It comes very naturally to me. If you say that and you get into the habit of just expressing that, even if it does not feel natural at the outset, sooner or later, your words will feel more real. They will feel more natural. And eventually, they will become a more ingrained part of your personality, so that you see yourself as somebody that's perfectly comfortable. And it is quite interesting. These are the types of situations in which words play a tremendous role in our outcomes, not only in this particular sphere of public speaking, but in general, Omar. For instance, if I want to become an athlete and I start telling people, you know, I'm very athletic, I really enjoy fitness, it's very fun for me, I really like that. Well, a lot of things are going to happen. People will be more inclined to invite me when they're going out hiking, when they're going out for a run. I will somehow start picking up on little cues here and there. Maybe a website will pop up with sportswear, and then another one will pop up with a virtual race that I can sign up for. So opportunities will kind of magically begin presenting themselves. Of course, it's not magic. It's more of something that you're bringing forth, even with your own awareness. But it almost feels like magic, because when you start claiming yourself to be a certain way, things do start aligning in a way that you see the reality of this, and it does become something that hardens into fact in the long run, which is why, of course, you should never go around speaking negatively of yourself or to others about yourself, you see?
No, yeah, I agree. And then in some aspect, it's kind of like saying, like, fake it till you make it. But, yeah, what you do tell yourself as important in who you are and who you will be. And I think it really just boils down to, I mean, yes, you can be telling yourself these things and trying to, you know, push past these hurdles like self-doubt, but then it comes to then the element of your environment and then the people around you. Like now, for example, say if you went and asked a poor person, like, oh, you think I can go get a Ferrari by next year? They're going to be like, oh, no, you can't do that. That's impossible. But then you go and ask four or five rich people or four or five millionaires, you think I can get a Ferrari by next year? They're like, oh, that's easy. That's, you know, one Ferrari, you could get two, you know. So I think it matters on that as well, and like really who you surround yourself with and the type of energy and the type of words they're feeding you.
Omar, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly accurate. I could not have said it better myself. There's a part in the book where I mention that just as what you are saying is important, what is being said to you is important. So I would say definitely move away from anybody that is unsupportive of your goals. If you feel that there's a circle of people that you don't believe will be tremendously supportive, it's best just to not verbalize your desires in front of them, because you don't want them, you know, cutting down your dreams or saying you won't be able to. It's much better to surround yourself, as you were saying, with people that say, sure, easy peasy, that's not a problem. Absolutely, that's very important. It's also important to move away from anybody who speaks to you in a way that is cruel. Now, that might seem very obvious, but it's actually something that many people do fall into because they have friends or family members or teachers or people surrounding them that say things that are, to be honest, not supportive at all. If anything, quite the opposite, and they might be said jokingly or teasingly or for your own good, or because I'm so honest, or whatever the case may be. And those things are not helpful at all. If a friend, a family member, a frenemy, or anybody is trying to put you down, it's far better to move away from that person, steer the conversation in another direction, or simply not to meet with that person unless it's in a situation where you don't have to really have a conversation, like maybe at the movies or something, because really you don't need any negative influences. What you need is an environment that supports whatever it is that you're telling yourself. However, I think that a wonderful thing is that most people would not necessarily put you down or say that your dreams are unattainable. It helps if you can find somebody like the millionaires in the story that you were describing. That would be ideal. But in reality, because you're going to be saying things that sound very natural just by nature of the way that you're going to say them, you're not even going to go around asking that or posing that as a question. In case that you wanted a Ferrari, maybe you would say something like, yeah, I'm kind of always, you know, very lucky financially. I'm always finding money coming to me from unexpected sources. I'm always coming into money. It's always very easy for me to find what I want whenever I want. For instance, cars tend to come naturally to me. At some point, I'm sure that I'm going to get my Ferrari. I mean, you just speak about this in a very matter-of-fact way. Let me tell you, actually, I was just reminded of something very, very unusual that I had not thought about in years. Back when I was an editor for a newspaper, that was my previous career, I had the opportunity to interview Beyoncé. That was for her movie Dreamgirls. She was in a movie called Dreamgirls. So this must have been in around 2000, six maybe, to, I guess. I mean, this was a very long time ago. So in any case, I was interviewing her and she was very matter of fact. She was saying, things always work out for me. So I wanted this award and I got this award and then I wanted this other award and it also happened. And then I wanted to do this and this happened. And she wasn't coming off as a boastful woman, but rather a very successful woman that was speaking about things in a very matter-of-fact way. And I think that, I mean, Beyoncé, obviously, she's a very talented woman, but I think that up to a certain degree, her mindset has also been very instrumental in getting her to where she is now. Many people in entertainment are tremendously insecure, if only because the nature of entertainment includes receiving a lot of rejection, especially at the outset with auditions and maybe later with reviews. But they tend to be very, very insecure. In the case of Beyoncé, I would say that the opposite was true. This is clearly a massively confident woman that not only is very confident in herself, but also very confident in the future. So we were talking about the possibility of winning. At that point, I believe it was an Oscar. She has not won an Oscar yet, but I wouldn't dismiss it as a possibility because she was like, well, yes, sometimes I set my mind on getting this award and I get this award and then I get this other award and then I want to be in the show and it happens. And she was just so natural in speaking about these things that I believe that that was also the way she used to speak about things when she was only just starting out. So I think that that is a very good role model in that regard, somebody to emulate. Not saying things in a boastful way like, oh, I have this great talent and you don't. No, but just telling yourself and telling others, things come naturally to me. Of course they do. I mean, when I set my mind to do this thing, it gets done. When I set my mind to get this other thing, I get the thing. You're not even questioning it. It's just a fact.
No, I think that's true, and it goes with the fine line between self-confidence and arrogance, and you got to be able to distinguish between the two, and it's always good, and actually it's preferred to have self-confidence, but now when you're sort of going into the realms of, oh, it's me doing this, like I'm the one who's doing this, I'm achieving this, then you kind of falling in the wrong path and you kind of want to check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Absolutely. That's also very accurate. However, I do think that you can sway too far in the other direction, that maybe because a person does not want to fall into arrogance or anything boastful, especially now with COVID, that a lot of people have been losing their jobs or a lot of people have been, not feeling great. It might come off as overly cocky to say, yeah, my life is fabulous. Of course, that's not what you want to do. But you also don't want to sway in the other direction, which would be maybe self-deprecating humor, which a lot of people use because it's fun, because it, it makes people laugh. It's enjoyable, but it's very hurtful in the long run, because if your jokes are always based off on you being the loser or you not doing well, that again is very hurtful, because eventually you might come to actually believe these things that you're saying about yourself, negative things, and people around you might believe them as well, even if you're saying this is part of a joke, even if you're saying this just to make people laugh. You don't want to sway that far in that direction either. I would say that, as you were mentioning, you do need to check yourself. You don't want to come across as, oh, I'm the best of the best. No, but you do need to speak in ways that you would, that if they were actually to be true, would be favorable. It, like, for example, if you tell people, oh, I would love to help you out with your party. I'm always a very popular party guest. I'm great at planning parties. Then that's a good thing. It's not a good idea to say, well, I'll join your party, but I'm always a wallflower. I'll be there by the corner. You don't want to say that. It's not helpful to anyone.
No, it's not helpful to anyone. And I think in any aspect or even a tad bit, you should never speak about yourself in a negative manner, because what you're doing is the second you're putting it out there, you're sort of integrating that in your subconscious, and inadvertently you're believing it. So like what you're telling, what you're saying, you're believing. Like it's like the thought, and then after the thought, it's the belief, and then after the belief, it happens, sort of say. So like if you're telling yourself that, then sort of in your subconscious, you're believing it, and then it's manifesting. So in any realm of you trying to shy away from speaking negatively, I always say don't, even as a joke, like you said, it's not good. So going back to like choose to prevail, like what are some of the ways you choose to prevail?
Well, for instance, let me tell you, Omar, well, public speaking, that was definitely a way that I chose to prevail in that realm. I used to be tremendously, tremendously self-conscious myself. When I was younger, when I was very young, I had a very, very, very hard time doing anything of the sort. In fact, even in school, if the teacher asked a question, I would never put my hand up. And if I were called on to answer, well, I would blush, I would sweat, I would stammer, I would nearly pass out, panic attack. Crazy. And then all of a sudden, I did experience a tremendous shift in that regard. And now I sometimes do work as a professional speaker. So that was really going from one extreme to the other. And I think that was something very helpful in my career and just in general. I have also overcome a number of things, both big and large. For example, a big hurdle, or rather than a hurdle, a big tragedy that I had to somehow overcome was the deaths, very, very tragic deaths of my father, my younger brother, one of my closest female friends, and also another friend that was my makeup artist. So I lost all of those people in a very short span of years, all in different and very, very tragic circumstances, very sad circumstances. And in that case, well, firstly, it was learning to deal with grief, which is something that is addressed in the book. That is something that sadly most of us, if not all of us, will have to deal with at some point in our lives. And it's important to deal with that. And also, here's the thing. I can't say that there's any silver lining to be found in something of that nature, because these are tragedies and some things are just too terrible to be explained away. But living through something of this nature does give you a different perspective on things that are a little bit more minor. For example, not to say that I'm always super zen and super relaxed. No, of course not. But for instance, if I go to the store and they ran out of something that I wanted to buy, of course, that's an annoyance. But compared to the things that are really more dramatic that I have experienced, tragedies, true tragedies, it doesn't even register. Not finding something in a store is an annoyance so minor that it doesn't really bother me at all. And the same would go for things such as being stuck in traffic, maybe somebody not saying hello. I mean, these are things that many people might find stressful, hurtful, difficult. But when you have lived through something that is really, really dramatic, it does cause you to put other things in perspective. So that's something that's also important to keep in mind. All of us, unfortunately, at some point might experience something that for us personally might be very devastating. And that will help put other minor problems into perspective, I believe.
Okay. Now, with just on the book and with the aspect of the book and trying to pick, you know, these things or what you feel like, you know, is a major concern, how did you go about in picking what to share on and touch on and shed light on, and what you think you should leave out? Like how are you like, okay, I think you know, I'm going to speak about public speaking and, you know, like this self-consciousness, or I think that maybe, you know, how you view yourself is important, and then like, I don't think this is important. Like, what was your like mindset, or what was your criteria in choosing?
I think Omar, that I was basically, even though I'm telling you that I have a very diverse group of friends, mm-hmm. when I was writing it, I was thinking about concerns that they had voiced, and even though they're really a very varied group of people, certain themes kept popping up again and again. For example, many of them were saying, you know, I'm having trouble sleeping at night because I feel very concerned about where my life is going, for instance. That was a common concern. So that's something that I thought that needs to be addressed in the book. Then, surprisingly, several of my friends mentioned insecurities regarding physical flaws or what they perceived to be their physical appearance. I thought that was a little bit unusual because that is normally a very private topic. Even though it's something that's very concerning to many, it's not something that people discuss. Men normally don't discuss it, and although I mean, stereotypically, women do. The reality is that adult women do not go around talking about that either. It's just not a thing that people discuss because nobody wants to be considered vain or silly, or, you know, it's something that's more private. And yet many of my friends were mentioning that they were having issues. Maybe they felt that they were aging, or they felt that they were not attractive enough to attract a partner that treated them well, or a number of things that had some kind of link to physical appearance. So I thought that might be a topic for the book because it's coming up over and over again. Another topic that was definitely popping up time and time again was loneliness and what to do when you're alone. And of course, that was obvious. That was an obvious choice because I completed the book during the pandemic, or the start of the pandemic, where people were all the more scared and when lockdowns were much more strict and severe. And many people found themselves being locked up at home, and in some cases alone, when they really did not want to. So I thought that was a very, very important topic to touch upon. So what I did was exactly that. I identified topics that my very diverse group of friends were mentioning time and time again, and tried to address those. The interesting thing is that I really did have a cross-section of demographics, in the sense that really I have friends that are 20 years younger than myself. I have friends that are 20 years older than myself. I have friends in different cultures, different cities, different languages, different walks of life. And strangely, some of the same themes were popping up again and again and again. And certainly I think those are things that are more universal, much more universal than something that a specific person might be talking about. These are topics that might be of interest to a wider range of individuals.
Okay, and then what did you notice when talking to your friends and these various different diverse groups? What were some of the overlap that you saw? I know you mentioned loneliness and physical appearance, but what were some of the other things?
Well, for example, one that I did not expect to find, because I was not even aware of this, was an issue that people are having with generational strife. Let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. Up until recent years, I was fairly confident that really there was not much difference between one generation and another, for many reasons. Firstly, a lot of things that are fashionable in entertainment, in clothing, in many different things cut across demographics and are used by all. So although I have a lot of friends that are very young and a lot of friends that are far older than I am, they don't seem tremendously different from one another, and they actually don't look tremendously different from one another. I mean, of course, you can tell the difference between, I don't know, a 20-year-old and a 60-year-old, but the difference would be nowhere near as pronounced as the difference might have been a few generations ago. You might find them wearing the same clothes. You might find them listening to similar music. So I had thought that that was really a situation where generations as groups were getting along just fine. So I was very surprised when toward the end of last year, a lot of problems between generations as a whole started to pop up. I don't know if you remember this, but this was a time when phrases like okay boomer came into play. And of course, certain other people were describing millennials as snowflakes and this and that, which was to me very, very odd because it means people were feeling categorized based not only on their personality or beliefs, but also a lot on their age, which I thought was very strange. And in speaking with friends, I found that that was a concern. A lot of my older friends were encountering what they perceived as ageism in the workplace and in other circles or spheres. And a lot of my younger friends were also experiencing a form of age discrimination in their careers, perhaps, where they were perceived to be maybe not as reliable or maybe a little flaky, when that might not have been the case at all. So I thought, okay, that's very strange. I absolutely was not aware that this was going on at all. But I thought, well, now that I'm aware, let's take a deeper look into this phenomenon and see what can be done about this. So I devoted a chapter to that as well. And in reality, I mean, in our day-to-day lives, I think that it would serve us all, Omar, to look beyond age when meeting new friends. In this regard, there have been just so many movements recently to avoid discrimination regarding race, income, disabilities, all kinds of things. Those have already been addressed by someone. But age discrimination is really, it seems to me, like the last frontier. Right now, it still seems to be fine to make fun of people because they're too old, or even more bizarrely, because they're too young. So that's something that really makes no sense, especially because people as individuals, there are more pronounced differences between individuals within a group than differences between two groups. I would venture to say that maybe you, who are a very young man, I would venture to say that there are more differences between yourself and another young man that I might find than between your generation and another generation as a whole. It doesn't make sense to me that there should be a divide.
Yeah, no, I don't understand that either. And in that aspect, it kind of like mind-boggling. But, you know, I think you, in the right aspects of what you did with compiling your book and trying to, you know, sort of be that motivation, driving force in doing so. So that's very commendable. But my next question was, in this book, and as someone is reading this and, you know, going through this, what was your goal in where you wanted to take, you know, start the journey, and then where did you want to leave them from the last page?
That's a wonderful question. Okay, what I wanted people to do was complete the reading of the book, which would take them maybe an afternoon, because again, it is a very compact book meant to be read over the course of an afternoon, a few hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, you should be done. And I wanted them to walk away feeling so much more self-confident, more empowered, with a more strengthened sense of agency, with a feeling that things will be all right in the end. And if they're not all right, then it isn't the end. I mean, definitely, you will always, always, always be able to triumph over adversity if that is what you desire.
Okay. No, I mean, a little better mindset in the execution. And If anyone wanted to, get in touch and like read this book, how can they go about in purchasing it?
Thank you. That would be very easy because it's really available anywhere. You can get it on Amazon, you can get it on Barnes & Noble, you can get it at Target.com, at Walmart.com, at many smaller platforms as well. Also on a website called Heart of Hollywood Magazine. .com. In that case, you can also purchase signed books through that website. But there are just so many places that are selling it today that I'm very happy that it's reaching a wider audience. I'm very happy that people are liking it, implementing it, and more than anything, finding value in the pages and walking away more confidently, walking away boldly, and knowing that things will be fine.
Okay, that's awesome that it's so widespread like that. So that's really cool in that aspect. Now, in aspect of anyone reading the book and kind of wanting a little more direction or like a little more guidance, how could they go about reaching you and connecting with you?
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking. Well, they can go on Instagram and follow me at this on my Instagram, which is at choose to prevail. Or if they're a little bit more old school and they like using Facebook, we also have a public Facebook group called Choose to Prevail. It's actually a very active Facebook group. People are commenting constantly and posting and just interacting in general. So I can be found through either one of these two venues. I would love to hear from readers. I would love to hear from anybody that might be interested in feeling more confident, more bold, more empowered. And I believe that this book will be a tool that will help them.
Yes, and
It
then
will feel just like they sat down with their friend with a cup of coffee, with a glass of wine, and everything will be better.
and then yeah, with soon if you share those links with me, I'll put it in the show notes. And then with choosing to prevail and choosing to be your best self, I always ask the guest to end on a quote and send us off with a quote. So if you could be so kind, Sandy, to do that.
I would love to. And the quote is exactly the one that I just mentioned, which is everything will be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, then it's not the end.
Sandy Rodriguez, the author of Choose to Prevail. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much, Omar.